Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello, jumping right in.
Jumping right in. I'm excited.
Me too.
We have another adventurous climber.
That's true.
Unlucky climber.
Well, yes, that is also true.
Yeah, but just lucky enough.
Again, you're correct.
A theme of the show.
Imagine that. Before we jump in, I did want to let you know that we have a bonus episode coming out over on Patreon. We're going to be talking about the Hartford Circus Fire over there. On July 6, 1944, a fire broke out during an afternoon performance of the Ringling Bros and Barnum and Bailey Circus that was attended by 6,000 to 8,000 people, killing at least 167 and leaving more than 700 injured. It was one of the worst fire disasters in United States history. So that's what we're going to be talking about over on Patreon. If you're interested in that, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We have that and like 38 other bonus episodes for you to check out. Pretty cool.
I just love the word bonus.
Thanks for saying that. That valuable information. But anyway, why don't we jump into this week's story?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to be talking about Greg Hine, who was kind of crushed by a boulder.
Greg?
Yeah. Thankfully not like pinned down, but still a boulder hit him. Not great. Our story takes place in Kings Canyon National Park in California. About an hour from Fresno, California, the park sees around 700,000 visitors every year. Greg Hine grew up loving the wilderness, and especially loved hiking. He would often go fishing with his grandparents, and when he was young, he had already begun going on solo nature walks. He said that he would intentionally try to get himself lost in the Sierras so he could familiarize himself with the Sierra Mountains and find his way out. Classic rowdy child.
Yeah,
walking around, getting lost.
An adventurous soul. I mean, is that not the best way to learn, though?
Sure. Yeah, he was definitely learning. He would hike off and come back later than the time his parents told him to come back, which they did not like, but he always found his way back.
Yeah, and then he got home and was like,
sorry.
I'm gonna do it again.
Right. Midway through his senior year of college, Greg dropped out to pursue his passion for the outdoors. He worked as a wildland firefighter, a rafting guide, a cave naturalist, and learned everything he could about trees and plants. He moved around to Oregon, Alaska, Vermont, and Utah. And he followed a girl to New Zealand. But he eventually regretted his lack of degree, and in early 2014, he returned to complete his studies in environmental sciences at Humboldt State University. After his graduation in 2014, all Greg wanted to do was go on a hike in the Sierras. Greg at that point was 33 years old and was living in Clovis, California, which is just northeast of Fresno. He hadn't been doing a lot of hiking since he was constantly busy with classes or work, so the hike he wanted to take 4th of July weekend was a way for him to decompress and get back in touch with the mountains. His plan was to leave on Thursday and get back home on Monday. He told his father, Doug Hine, he was going up to Kings Canyon on Mount Goddard for the weekend. He didn't give his father a very detailed outline, but told him the general area that he was going to, which was very normal for Doug. Greg never told him too many specifics about where he was going. It was mostly, I'm going here, I'll be back whenever.
Well, he did say, like, a specific day.
Yeah, he told his dad, expect me back around Monday.
Fair enough.
So as much as Greg loved hiking and being outdoors, he wasn't the best at preparing and packing his bag for the journey. As per usual, on his way out, Greg was pretty chaotic with getting ready. He was running around the house looking for all of his supplies, and he asked his dad if he knew where his camping stove was. And Doug just kind of rolled his eyes because he didn't know where any of Greg's gear was. And so after some fumbling around looking for his things, Greg finally left the house.
I can relate.
Yeah, I'm like, this You're sounds like you.
Yeah. This is very much how I operate.
Yes.
I've been changing so, like, slowly but surely, because you're a planner.
But I am.
I am in my natural state, I make no plans.
That's true. It sounds pretty ADHD if I had to put a diagnosis on it, not that I actually can do that. But
thank you, Dr. Fit.
Yes.
Does this mean that I can get Adderall now?
Maybe.
Sweet.
As I said earlier, Greg's destination was Kings Canyon National Park, and he wanted to climb Mount Goddard. The mountain has an elevation of over 13,000 feet, and from the summit, there's a view of pretty much every high peak in the Sierras. Kings Canyon is a very diverse area, and considered the baby brother of Yosemite. There are hundreds of thousands of wilderness acres in Kings Canyon National Park, and many areas of the park are very remote and isolated. Very few people actually summit Mount Goddard in any given year. And Greg did know that this area of the park was less popular, but he didn't realize just how remote this area would actually be. He had been solo hiking since he was 18 years old and had done 200 plus mile trails. He found that the main reason he went on these solo hikes was because he couldn't find somebody to go with him on the days that he chose to hike, or find somebody who wanted to do the mileage that he wanted to do. So he was kind of solo hiking out of necessity because his plans were a bit too chaotic and...
Yeah.
What's the word? Yeah, ambitious? That's the word.
Yeah. It sounds like he was more married to his plan than having people with him.
Exactly.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Greg had been making solitary journeys for as long as he could remember. As a teenager in the central California suburb of Clovis, exploring the nearby Sierra Nevada mountains became his obsession. In college, his treks sometimes stretched to a week or more. Whenever he felt sad, frustrated, or unsure of his purpose, a long walk at high elevation was his medicine of choice. Greg's parents didn't really like their son's solo hiking. It made them very nervous, and he knew very clearly that they didn't like it because they had many conversations about it, but their son was grown, and he was going to do whatever he wanted. I mean, he was 33 years old, so... They can say, hey, Greg, we don't like this, but he's still an adult and can say, I hear you, still gonna do it.
Yeah, I hear you and I'm ignoring you.
Correct. I'm choosing to ignore that. On Thursday, July 3rd, Greg got up and drove 3 hours to a trailhead in the Sierra National Forest. Greg got to the park a little later than he wanted to that Thursday. He got out of the car and grabbed his pack, his GPS, and a camera, but left his guidebook and his cell phone in the car. Around 8:20 p.m., he set out from Florence Lake Trailhead.
Did he do that on purpose? Like leave his phone and guidebook? Or did he just forget it?
I don't know. Maybe he forgot it, but...
Oh, is there no signal anyway?
I doubt it. I mean, you're on the top of a mountain, so in a remote area of a national park.
That's fair. What? Sorry, what year is this? Is this like cell phones are new?
2014.
The year of the iPhone 5. I don't know. I came up with that.
I was like, whoa, you had that locked and loaded.
No.
Anyway, he left his phone and his guidebook in the car. And at around 8:20 p.m., he set out from Florence Lake Trailhead. He enjoyed night hiking, and the weather was perfect for it. He planned a 5-day hike from Florence Lake to Mount Goddard and back, which would be around 20 miles each day. And that night, he camped out in a meadow by Blaney Hot Springs. Greg was well aware of the dangers he could potentially face out there, so he tried to set up his hike in a way that would minimize the chances of running into an issue. Doug said Greg's favorite thing to say was, "Don't worry about it, things will work out."
Yeah, I'm really relating to...
to Greg?
To Greg right now.
Yeah, totally.
It'll work. It'll be fine.
And Friday morning was day two out there, and so far Greg's hike was going according to plan. He woke up that morning feeling pretty amazing. He soaked in the hot springs before he started hiking again, and he poured some water into a pouch of dehydrated food since he actually never found his camping stove before setting out. After a couple of hours hiking, he came to a split in the trail. He went right and went south up the San Joaquin River, and while on the trail, Greg actually ran into another hiker who was hiking this trail, and the two stood there and chatted with each other for around 15 to 20 minutes because they didn't see anyone else, and they're like, oh, cool, let's chat it up.
Yeah, there is something about like when an interaction is rare, people are really interested to engage.
Yeah, totally. This was the first person Greg had seen out there, and it was the height of the summer and the holiday weekend, so people were out hiking, but the fact that he hadn't seen anyone meant that this was a very remote area, and after parting ways, Greg wouldn't see another person until he was being rescued.
Wow. And it's like it's a national park.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's designated for people to go explore.
Totally.
Or be preserved.
Yes, and there were definitely a lot of people in the national park for the holiday weekend hiking and everything around that time, but it was just that specific trail and specifically Mount Goddard that was very remote.
Hmm.
And many people like didn't hike it.
How long did you say his planned like route was?
He was going to be doing around 20 miles a day, and he had a
5-day
hike ahead of him.
So 100 miles?
Yeah, I guess.
Wow. Here I thought like the mountain hike I did was like maybe 5.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
3. I don't know. It was a lot uphill, but...
Yeah, you were straight vertical. That's got to count for something.
It does count for something, but Jesus, like 100 miles.
Well, yeah, that's an intense hike.
A lot, yeah.
It seems like this is kind of his thing, though.
I think it's fair to say that.
Yeah, right. So as I said, this area was very isolated and also had some unforeseen hazards. Some of the biggest things to look out for was sudden changes of weather and elevation, and most of that area is very near or above 8,000 feet in elevation, which is around where people start experiencing high-altitude pulmonary edema or high-altitude cerebral edema, which can be life-threatening.
Tell me what those are. Do you know edema? Edema Menzel? Come on, folks.
Come on.
It's a joke.
High-altitude pulmonary edema is a life-threatening condition that occurs when fluid builds up in the lungs due to rapid ascent to high altitudes, usually above 2,500 meters. It is a severe form of altitude sickness, and the most common fatal manifestation of severe high-altitude illness. So that's high-altitude pulmonary edema. High-altitude cerebral edema is a life-threatening condition that occurs when the brain swells due to oxygen deprivation at high altitudes. So it's like the very severe forms of altitude sickness.
Well, that sucks.
It does suck. Yeah, that sounds like a very intense place to be. It says most of the area is around 8,000 feet in elevation, which is around where people start experiencing these extreme forms of altitude sickness.
Oh, so you probably should like... adjust first. Yeah.
By the end of the day, Greg had reached Lake Martha and climbed to an elevation of around 11,000 feet. And where he parked, the elevation was 7,300 feet. And so far, the altitude wasn't having any effect on him, but he was definitely at a pretty high altitude.
He climbed 4,000 feet in one day?
He did.
Over 20 miles?
I guess, yeah.
That seems insane.
It does.
Like, he must be in great shape.
Yeah, I assume he was.
Could you even wrap your mind around going on a 10-mile walk?
No.
At level?
No.
Yeah.
I go on an hour walk, and I'm like, whew, around the neighborhood?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's like enough.
A couple miles?
Yeah, exactly. But the good thing was is the elevation wasn't having an effect on him at that point. He was at 11,000 feet, and he was still feeling pretty good. And he spent that night camping by Lake Martha. His plan for Saturday was pretty straightforward. He walked around Lake Martha, and then he would summit Mount Goddard. Easy peasy. But as he hiked along, the terrain noticeably changed. He was going through ancient glacier country and had to hike over boulder fields and some patches of snow. Right before reaching the top of Mount Goddard, Greg decided to take a rest and have a snack, so he sat on a boulder and ate for a moment because he wanted to slow himself down a little bit. That way he didn't run into any altitude problems. So he's kind of trying to pace himself. A couple years earlier, Greg had experienced some altitude sickness, so he wanted to check in with his body, drink some water, eat some food, and for the moment, he was feeling great. While he snacked, he took out a map and studied it, and his concern was how he was going to come back down the mountain once he reached the top. This was his first time climbing Mount Goddard, so he didn't know the ridge and didn't know what difficulties were there. Even with studying the route, it was hard to know exactly what to expect since he had never seen it before. He just knew that the north side of Goddard Ridge had a pretty decent drop, and the east side may have been a little bit easier to descend, but he decided he would make his final call once he got up to the summit because he wouldn't really know before then.
Right, and as he says, it'll all work out.
Exactly. Greg's mantra.
Figure it out.
He was really excited to get there, and in his rush to pack up, he didn't realize that he had set his map down on the rock next to him and forgot to pick it back up.
Rip.
Yeah.
That sucks.
But around noon, Greg reached the top of Mount Goddard and was feeling great. At 13,568 feet, the view from the top of Mount Goddard in California's Sierra Nevada was magnificent. Jagged peaks, granite slopes, and cobalt blue ponds sprawling to the rim of a cloudless sky. Although patches of snow scattered the landscape, the sun was hot on Greg's skin. He could see the haze of the Central Valley and all the other peaks, so he started taking some pictures of the full view, that way his buddy could see it later on. So he's just taking little snapshot pictures of the each, you know, basically a panorama that he's going to patch together later.
Mm. Did he take it on the iPhone? Or does he have, like, a camera?
No, I think it was on his phone.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait, no, he left his phone in the car.
Right.
So it was a camera.
Cool.
Cool.
Take a picture of that with a Kodak.
Turn my life to negative to positive. I just want you to know that.
No, he's at the top. 305.
It's Mr. Worldwide.
He's just saying, Dale. What does that even mean? You're going to type in Dale to fucking Google right
no.
now.
No. I was going to put the little thing. This word is used to say go ahead or let's go. The whitest explanation ever. This word is
let's
used
go.
To say let's go.
Come on, vominos.
Greg went to the summit register and was slightly taken aback. There had only been 3 or 4 people who had signed it that year. So I guess there's like a book at the top of the mountain that's like kept in a metal box. And then you can, when you summit it, you can take it out and sign your name and write a little note. And there were only like 3 or 4 other people that had done it that year.
Well, that's comforting.
Right. So this was his first indication that he was in an extremely remote area of the park. And he thought that Mount Goddard was a much more heavily trafficked peak.
Now, let me reframe. Kind of cool that he's one of the 4 this year.
Definitely cool.
It's unique. It's an accomplishment.
Totally. But he is by himself, so he's thinking, okay, now I have to get the hell off this mountain.
And that's what I call a vibe killer. Okay?
Vibe check? Greg was feeling a little troubled because he hadn't decided which way to go yet. He had left his map on the rock, and there was a steep gully filled with boulders stretched out in front of him. He didn't want to side hill through a large boulder field for a few miles, so he was looking for the least technical route down the North Ridge. So he had decided to go down the North Ridge, even though it was, like, kind of difficult. But it seemed like the best way.
Right. Can I ask a question? He came up which side?
I think from the south?
Okay. So is going back from whence he came not an option?
I guess it was, but it just wasn't Greg's style.
It's just like, okay, we look at the book, we feel a little bit out of our depth, and we're not too sure about how to proceed. We don't have a map. Just go back.
Maybe the way he came, this is purely speculation, but maybe the way he came was a lot easier to ascend than to descend.
That makes sense.
So I'm assuming he had to choose a different way.
Mm.
Because he did. And he was already having the thoughts like, okay, I need to find the best way down so I don't get stuck because I'm very alone.
Greg's on top of it.
Yeah. When he got off the ridgeline, he came to a scree, which is a slope covered in loose stones.
I love that name.
Yeah, I knew you would.
Okay.
The steep terrain was covered with these loose stones, so Greg moved slowly to avoid setting off a rock slide.
Like an avalanche?
Kind of. Dude. Yeah, but made of rocks.
Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, so every step he took was ankle deep in dirt and rocks. He wasn't walking on solid ground. Every couple of steps, he'd have to wait to see if the boulders were loose or if there were any loose ones above him. He was trying to choose the least...
Are you actually fucking kidding me?
He was trying to choose the least technical route, and he's like, let's go this way.
Let's go to the dirt snow.
No, I actually can't...
Under the boulders.
I can't say that he made the wrong call, because I would never know which way to go, which is like the best
way.
Well,
I mean, it sounds like he had a handful of bad options.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he chose the option he believed to be the best, so...
No, but this makes me think... How bad were the other options?
Right.
If this is the best way.
No, exactly.
Like somebody who's incredibly experienced has chosen the dirt snow and the boulders.
Correct.
What were the other three options?
I don't know.
I don't even know. It's just like, okay, you can fall straight down.
It's like he looks to the north, he sees the boulders, and then he looks to the east and he sees like lightning and the devil's voice. He's like, well, I guess I got to go to the boulders. I don't know.
It's crazy.
Just as he got to the bottom of the slope, there was a snowfield, and he thought he could slide down it and self-arrest, which means stopping himself if he needed to. But the fear of uncontrollably sliding was also present, so he was trying to gather himself and talk himself into being comfortable with the situation he was in. Because at this point, he's kind of starting to feel out of his depth. Like, he's... He's getting nervous, he's by himself, he's in an extremely remote area, and he's understanding that, like, he's in a dangerous situation and he has to make all the right steps for this to not go wrong.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
He started working his way down, but as he grabbed onto a boulder to brace himself, a small rock broke away in his hand, which was troubling. And in that moment, he saw a 3-foot boulder tumbling down the mountain straight toward him. He had no idea where this rock came from, but there wasn't much he could do to avoid it because it was coming right at him and very fast. So before he could jump out of the way, the boulder smashed right into his right calf, snapping his tibia and fibula and knocking him onto his back. Greg was instantly thrown off his feet and began sliding down the mountain on his backpack and skidded onto a snowfield. As he picked up speed, his right heel hit a bump, and looking down, he saw bone jutting through the skin below his knee. He was careening toward a mound of exposed rocks and saw there was a streak of red blood passing him on the right-hand side. He dug his left hand and left heel into the snow, stopping his slide just in the nick of time. He knew that incident was going to change the trajectory of his entire hike. So now he was done sliding, but he's left with the aftermath of a bone sticking out of his leg and a trail of red blood behind him.
Oh my God. And he's like 40 miles from his car.
Like he's far. He's in the middle of nowhere.
Dude.
Yeah.
Woof.
He realized there was no way he'd be able to hike out of there like he had planned. So at this point, it had turned into a survival situation in a matter of seconds. He crawled onto the rock pile in front of him, and pain was beginning to pulse through his leg, but he tried to ignore it, along with his pounding heart, and assess his predicament. When he looked down, he noticed his foot was limp, and his leg was bleeding profusely. One of the bones in his shin had broken through his skin and was jutting out, so
yikes.
It was a full-on compound fracture.
Oh, I can't do, like, the visceral injuries like this.
Yeah.
Ugh.
He was too badly injured to make it down the mountain, and there was no cell phone reception in this isolated area, and he didn't even have his phone, so it didn't matter. He told his parents he would be back home on Monday, but they would wait until Tuesday at the earliest to report him missing, so no one was likely to find him before Tuesday. He immediately went into survival mode. He knew he needed to get himself off of the snow, that way he didn't soak up any more moisture into his clothes and make himself colder. He also decided he should put on some extra warm clothing. He pulled off his shorts, very carefully, you know, as to not disturb the bone jutting out of his leg, and replaced them with polypropylene long johns and fleece pants. He had 3 layers of long undershirts topped by his button-down hiking shirt. He kept his right shoe off to reduce the stress on his shattered leg, and he put on a hat since he didn't want to become hypothermic and possibly go into shock.
Wait, so what day is this?
This is Saturday.
Oh, so he's got to last till Tuesday.
At the earliest, yeah.
At the earliest.
Right.
Probably more like Wednesday or Thursday. Wow. Yeah, the only thing I'm thinking of is like maybe try and find like some sticks you can use as crutches, and that's your best shot.
I don't think he was in a really good area to find like big sticks like that because he was in the middle of like a boulder field.
Well, good luck.
Right. And he can't walk.
Yeah.
So.
Oh my God, is he going to have to set it himself? He probably has to.
We'll just keep going.
Oh.
Yeah. Adrenaline was coursing through him, which helped with the pain as he got himself dressed, but he took a second to breathe and relax. He knew he couldn't make the situation any better, but he could make it worse, so he needed to focus. He took a few deep breaths and tried to focus on exactly what he needed to do before he tried to move. He was very slow and methodical. He was still bleeding heavily, but he knew that using a tourniquet could mean losing the limb, but he was scared of bleeding out and of losing consciousness. He decided his best bet was to wait until he absolutely had to tourniquet his leg. What he could do was try to stabilize his foot and splint his broken leg. Luckily, he managed to hold on to one of his trekking poles during the slide. So using a pocket knife, he made a slit in the right leg of his long johns and then cut a wide strip of his thermal rest mattress pad and wrapped it around the open wound on his calf and shin. He then took apart his collapsible trekking poles and used sections of the shafts as braces, binding them to the pad with his leather belt and nylon webbing. He used his belt to tighten it around his leg with enough pressure to hopefully stop the bleeding, but not to the point where he would risk killing the limb. As he tied it, he put enough pressure that his leg started to throb, so he loosened it a little bit to the point just before it would start throbbing. And he came to the decision while splinting his leg that he needed to move to a more comfortable place to stay until he could figure out his next moves. Farther down the mountainside, at the bottom of another snow patch, was a broad, flat shelf of rocks where he could lie comfortably. He shouldered his pack and tried to scoot on his butt toward the snowfield, but the weight and bulk made it impossible to maneuver. To do any kind of movement, he had to lighten his load. Greg had 2 days' worth of food and water left, but he figured he could live without it. He immediately began thinking...
Greg? What? He's gonna dump his food and water?
He immediately began thinking about the fact that he could go 3 days without water and 3 weeks without food. And he definitely didn't think he was going to be out there for 3 weeks. He actually believed he would be rescued within the first day or two, so he wouldn't need those things.
I guess this makes sense now, but maybe keep the water.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you have glaciers around you.
Right.
To drink the runoff, but I don't know. This makes me deeply uncomfortable.
Me too. The food is one thing, but the point is that he had to lighten his load in order for him to move. And I guess those were the heaviest things in his pack.
Yeah, water definitely. But yeah, what else does he have in his pack?
I mean, I don't have a list of all his things. I don't know.
I don't know. It's a surprising prioritization.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't think that would be necessarily the best call. But again, I'm not a professional in these situations.
Again, it's like, okay, he chose to do this. Like what? I guess his options were pretty fucking bad.
Right. He figured that the more important things would be the items that could keep him snug and dry and alert rescuers, or be used as tools. So he stowed his gloves and 2 fleece hats inside his pants and hung his headlamp around his neck. The backpack's sternum strap held a built-in whistle. He cut it off and tied it to the button loop of his shirt. He slipped his knife and some cordage into his pocket and stuffed his rain poncho inside his bivy sack, which is a water-resistant sleeping bag cover, and he slung the bundle around his shoulders and then left the pack behind and crab-walked away. So I guess he couldn't really take his backpack at all, and he just had to take whatever he could fit on his person.
That's crazy.
He decided to leave his sleeping bag, but he kept his bivy sack, which is like the sleeping bag cover.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how cold it gets.
It was July, but it did get pretty cold. I mean, there were definitely areas where there was snow, so.
Yeah, but he has clothes too.
Right. He scooted off of the snowfield, carefully holding up his leg and ankle, slowly making his way to a more protected area with a view. The effort made him dizzy with pain. He pushed off and slid 100 feet, stopping at the edge of a rocky shelf. It took 10 minutes of agonized creeping to reach the top of the formation, where he found a level spot beside a large boulder. After clearing away some stones to make a berth for his leg, he settled in. Surveying the treeless wilderness below him, Greg saw no sign of human life, but he gave a blast on his whistle and shouted help. His voice ricocheted off the surrounding slopes, echoing his cry all around him. Greg hollered and blew periodically for the rest of the day, shimmying his way into his bivy sack as the shadows lengthened. He monitored his physical condition, wiggling his foot to keep the circulation going, and kept watch for the lightheadedness that could indicate excessive blood loss. Despite his vigilance, he dozed off more than once. As darkness fell, Greg thought about the people he loved. His father, Doug, his mother, Randy, his sister, Kristen, his new girlfriend, Katrina, and wondered if he would see them again. Kristen's birthday was coming up on Wednesday, and he hoped that his death wouldn't become an event that she would associate with that date. A wave of helplessness washed over him, but he angrily pushed it away, vowing to focus instead on his survival. He settled into this spot for a very restless sleep. But he was still really concerned about the bleeding. So when he would wake up, he would check on his leg to see how much blood he was losing. Seeing it wasn't bleeding so much was a big relief for Greg. That night, temperatures fell into the 40s. So Greg tossed and turned, awakened by a bout of shivering or rock pressing into his leg. And by Sunday morning, to his relief, the bleeding had almost stopped. Sunday was day 4. And when he woke up, he resumed yelling and blowing his whistle. He would blow in 3 short bursts, to try to signal for help, but it had been so long with no help, he was starting to get really worried. The reality of his situation really began setting in. He wasn't going to be expected home until late on Monday. He had 2 days to kill, so at that point he figured the best thing he could do was alleviate his leg and get as comfortable as possible. He dug himself a shallow nest shielded from the wind by piles of stones. Around midday, he smelled a sour, rotten odor wafting from beneath the splint. The edges of the wound were discolored and oozing pus. Greg's leg had been shattered and he had a compound fracture, and it was going from a bad injury to a potentially lethal one. The infection in his leg could lead to gangrene, which is a life-threatening condition and also could mean he would lose his leg. He had made a critical mistake the day before when he was splinting his leg. He had covered the open wound with a piece of his sleeping pad. The Thermarest pad prevented the air from interacting with his wound. It kept the wound moist and put dirt into the wound. The moisture and dirt resulted in an infection setting in within the first 24 hours.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're not going to be thinking about that after you just got hit by a boulder.
Right. His main priority was to stop the bleeding, which he did, mostly, but now he has an infection.
This is very bad.
Yeah. Greg knew nobody would be looking for him, and he was dealing with a life-threatening injury. An open fracture is a very serious injury due to the risk of infection, potential for limb loss, and the potential for life-threatening complications if not treated promptly, and this is exactly what he was afraid of. Without prompt treatment with antibiotics and often surgery, the damage to the tissue, muscle, and nerves can be permanent. The possibility Greg would lose his leg was higher by the minute, but even worse, if the infection spread throughout his body, it would kill him. He knew that every time he moved, he was doing more damage to his leg, but once again, he decided to crab walk to a small snow patch a few yards away from where he was set up, and each step brought him a jolt of pain. He scrubbed the dirt and dead tissue from his leg with snow, and then packed more snow into the wound to flush out the filth as it melted.
Does that work? I guess it's water. I'm like, I guess the other thing is that it will dull the pain too, because he's pretty much icing his leg.
Yeah, so he hoped the cold would help cauterize it. I thought that cauterizing only was from like burning it, but maybe like extreme icing it too.
Yeah, maybe the cold makes it go like, you know what I mean?
Very scientific right? way of explaining that.
That's how it made sense to me.
No, I do understand.
Wow. A lot of learning today by me. You can cold cauterize. This is crazy.
Despite the fact that this was an extremely painful thing for Greg to do, he felt at least he was being active in his survival, and it gave him something to do and to work toward, which was better for his mental health than having nothing to do. So after cleaning out his wound the best he could with snow, he scooted his way back to his belongings. He didn't want to stay by the snow because he wanted to keep himself warm in the sun. Beside tending to his wound, he tried to move as little as possible. After some time, he said his brain did shut off most of the pain to his leg, so he was able to get some moments of peace. His brain also did him another favor. Before then, Greg said he could barely go 6 hours without eating before he started feeling hunger pains, but thankfully while he was out there, he was surprisingly fine in that regard. Back at the nest, Greg watched storm clouds drift across the sky from east to west, dropping virga, or rain that evaporates before reaching the ground over the valley. Suddenly he heard what sounded like a faint whoop of joy from the same direction.
Ladies, can I get a faint whoop of joy?
Ladies. So he heard a whoop of joy from a direction.
No, but it was faint.
Yes. And so adrenaline started pumping through him and he yelled, "Help, help." And he blew his whistle because he's now hearing someone. After hollering for like 20 minutes, he realized that the hiker who had made that sound was most likely miles away. And whatever acoustic quirk had carried the voice to him did not work in the opposite direction. So he was not being found. And also in that moment, he realized he was extremely thirsty.
That's so frustrating.
Yeah. He crawled to the snow patch, downed a few mouthfuls of snow, and crawled back, burrowing into his bivy sack. Sometime after sunset, he fell into another restless sleep. Monday morning came, and Greg woke so parched that he could barely swallow. Soon afterward, he heard another distant voice. It was repeating three syllables. Straining to make out what the words were, Greg thought he heard, "Where are you?" He sat up in his sack, blew his whistle, and shouted, "Help! Compound fracture! Canyon North Goddard!" The voice repeated, and Greg answered again, and the cycle continued. Eventually, he realized that what he'd taken for a searcher was a bird squawking.
Are you kidding me?
No.
The bird's imitating him?
I don't know if the bird was imitating him or if the bird's call sounded like, "Where are you?" I don't know. Because Greg wasn't screaming, "Where are you?" But it was a bird.
Oh my God.
Awful.
Dude, Greg is really having a rough time.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I can't even begin to understand the mental, like, gymnastics that you would have to do to get through this situation.
Yeah.
Like, you've already had two spikes of hope and you realize it's a bird.
Yeah, that sucks.
Oh my God. Devastating.
Greg stifled his disappointment and checked his wound, and it looked bad again. He would have to clean it more often, but the idea of dragging himself back and forth over the rocks filled him with dread. At the snow patch, he filled his poncho hood and then set the garment in the shade beside his nest. Now he could scrub his leg whenever he liked and drink melt water when he grew thirsty. Monday evening, as black clouds grew overhead, Greg found another use for his poncho. He stretched it across his nest and weighted the edges with rocks. Beneath it, he snuggled into his bivy sack, untouched by the rain that soaked the mountain. By then, Doug Hine was feeling annoyed with his son. Greg had been expected home hours earlier, and he hadn't bothered calling to say he would be late. He wasn't necessarily worried at that point. He was more angry with his son for not checking in because it seemed like...
Classic Greg.
On Tuesday afternoon, when Doug returned from work and found his house still empty, he began to worry. But he still thought Greg might turn up soon. He knew Greg liked to extend his hiking trips sometimes, and he also mistakenly believed that a search could not begin until the subject had been missing for 2 days, so he held off on calling anyone, including his wife Randy, who was at a conference in Las Vegas for work. He didn't want to scare her without a good reason.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Tuesday night was cold on the mountainside, and Greg could hardly sleep from the shivering. Another problem kept him awake as well. He could no longer move his right foot and had shooting pains in his leg. He was worried that the leg was atrophying and the muscles or tendons were in such bad shape that he was going to need to move from where he had been waiting. Some motion returned on Wednesday morning, but the leg was clearly deteriorating. Greg felt himself growing dehydrated despite the sips he had taken from the poncho hood and decided that it was time to move. He couldn't just sit there and wait any longer. He needed to save himself. Davis Lake was a mile and a half down the slope, and he thought he may have a better chance at being spotted there. And if not, the nights would be warmer at that altitude, and there would be plenty of water to drink. To keep his leg from impeding his progress, he used his bivy sack as a sling for his knee and stabilized his foot with webbing and cords. He then set off over the boulders, crab walking on three limbs. So can you picture that? His knee is basically up by his head and is tied around his neck and under his knee as a sling, and he's crab walking on his one leg and two arms.
I mean, really creative, but so strange and awkward.
Yeah, couldn't have been comfortable.
No.
And he didn't have his map, so he wasn't entirely sure what direction he should be heading in. He was kind of just going on vibes.
Not great, but let me say this, that it is his specialty.
That's true. He loves that, getting lost.
He's been practicing running on vibes for decades.
That's true. So you have high hopes for Greg.
I do.
Good. He had to go inch by inch, and if he jerked around too much or began going too fast and stopped, the shift of his hips and the bones would be excruciating. He also would get going a little too fast, and then he would stop because he wasn't in the most stable position, and he would fall over, which had to hurt.
Yeah, tripod is not stable.
Around the time Greg began his journey, his father had phoned Fresno County Sheriff's Department. By afternoon, dozens of volunteers from the county search and rescue team were combing the wilderness from Florence Lake to Mount Goddard, along with National Park Service rangers and several aircrafts. But they were covering an area of thousands of square miles. Finding a lone hiker out there could take some time. Greg's progress toward the lake was slow, but along the way he caught and ate half a dozen moths, three water bugs, two crickets, and some ants, which was his first food in 5 days. He had always heard of people eating crickets, so he figured now was as good a time as any to give them a try. He took off the back legs and wings so it wouldn't get caught in his throat, and he ate them. And he said it tasted almost almondy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of pleasant.
I actually have eaten a cricket before.
You have eaten a cricket?
I have. I was at a science museum, and to me, it tasted like a sunflower seed.
I am beyond shocked right now.
I was young. I was like, I think I was in high school.
You were in high school?
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, like early high school.
This does not compute. You hate almost all bugs.
I sure do.
But you've eaten one.
I was at a science museum and it was cooked and seasoned.
Okay. It didn't bug you at all?
Oh, it bugged me. But
oh my God, shut up. I don't know. I'm shook. Okay.
I'm just giving you my personal.
This is my
truth.
My truth.
Yeah. About 4 hours after he'd started out, he made it 1.6 miles and reached the lake's muddy shore. He took a long swig from an adjoining creek, gambling that its water would be less likely to contain intestinal parasites. After a long crawl, he lay down in the grass, absolutely exhausted. After building a new soft nest of grasses and wildflowers, he climbed into his sack. As Wednesday night rolled around, Doug finally called his wife, Randy, who tried to find a flight out of Vegas, but had no luck. So at 2 a.m., she leapt into a rented car and sped home, arriving 6 hours later. He didn't want to lose hope, but he was really scared for his son. When he talked on the phone with the sheriff sergeant, he told them Greg was in high spirits when he left. They wanted to know if he had gone out there with the intention of never being found again. So they were asking him, like, did he seem okay? What was his plans? Like, you know, stuff like that. And Doug was like, no, he was okay. Like, this is very, very Greg.
Yeah.
Not him getting lost, but like, he was just going out on a solo hike.
This is what he does.
Right. But Doug was reassured by the sheriff's many questions because he felt like they were being very professional and like they were very thorough. He was worried about everything, but was trying to keep a positive attitude about the rangers and their search and everything. So around 4 o'clock, Doug got the call that his son's car had been found at the trailhead of Florence Lake. Greg's dad was having a hard time, but Greg was having a worse time. He was facing one of his worst nights out there. Greg, once again, had his thoughts stray. And while he lay there brooding about how little he'd accomplished in his life, he had no wife, no kids, no career, he also knew that that day was his sister's birthday and felt terrible that he was missing for it. He said she had had some pretty terrible birthdays, so he didn't want his absence and possible death to make her have a bad day. He really didn't want to die on his sister's birthday. He also wanted to see his loved ones and his friends again, and eventually he drifted off to sleep. On Thursday morning, 9 rescue teams were inserted into the field by helicopter. They began their search along trails they believed would be the most popular route. When Greg had woken up, his arms were very sore and his leg was frozen stiffer than ever. Shortly after unkinking his leg, Greg heard a strange buzzing sound. He looked up and saw a helicopter in the distance and felt a rush of hope. He crab-walked his way onto a boulder and put a rock in his bivy sack and began to twirl it above his head to be noticed. But it all happened too fast, and Greg couldn't get there soon enough. The chopper disappeared, and that was the first time Greg had attempted standing on his leg, which was extremely painful and traumatic for the wound. As the hours wore on, the chopper passed 4 more times without pausing, and he resigned himself to spending another night in the open. He was so discouraged by everything, he decided to just take a nap because these helicopters couldn't see him anyway, and he was exhausted. By that time, the search team had made it to the top of Mount Goddard and found Greg's note and signature in the summit book. which was a good sign because they knew he had been in that area, so they focused their search to the area north of Mount Goddard. And one of those areas happened to be the basin around Davis Lake, which is where Greg was. Late that afternoon, Doug and Randy drove up to the Sheriff's Department Search and Rescue Commander Center, which is a trailer in the woods by Florence Lake. The couple arrived around 6:30 p.m., and a sergeant showed them maps of the next day's planned search areas. Minutes later, another helicopter, this one from Yosemite, flew slowly over Greg's campsite. He waved his sack and threw some rocks for good measure, and this time the pilot looked out the window, made eye contact with Greg, and nodded.
Oh, they were that close?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know, I just was assuming they were flying high up enough to where you couldn't make eye contact.
I guess that one was just close enough to Greg that they were able to make eye contact.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right, well, how do you feel now, Greg?
Pretty good.
This is pretty good.
Exactly.
This is great news.
The chopper touched down by the lake, and Greg struggled to keep himself from weeping as three burly trail crewmen came through the trees. He was so excited to talk to someone, and the search and rescue was happy to find Greg in relatively good health, considering how long he had been out there with a broken leg.
Yeah, well, to be honest, he's lucky that he only broke one leg.
Yeah, totally.
And in one kind of clean snap.
Yeah, it still sounds bad, though.
You know, as bad as it sounds, like, it could have been...
Oh, it could have been much worse.
His whole leg.
Totally.
Snapped in multiple places.
Or his femur.
Yeah.
Like, his shin is bad, but his femur would have been worse.
Yeah, it gets way worse.
Or the boulder could have hit him in the head.
Yeah, just could have been out of commission.
In the command center 20 miles away, the sergeant's cell phone rang, and he turned to Doug and Randy and grinned, telling them they had found Greg. Instant relief flooded over them, but then Doug realized that they didn't say how he was or if he even was alive. They told Doug he was alive and coherent, but he had a broken leg, which is like the best news ever. You know, like, obviously you don't want your son to have a broken leg, but he's okay. He's coherent. He's alive.
Yeah, this is pretty close to the best case scenario.
Yeah. By nightfall, Greg was laying in the hospital bed in Fresno with his family gathered around him.
Dude, how surreal is that moment?
Super.
Like, I don't know. I would have to like pinch myself.
Yeah.
It must feel so like such a whiplash.
Totally. I mean, he's just laying out there thinking about how he's going to die on his sister's birthday and how sad that is to then instantly being surrounded by his family in a hospital bed.
Yeah, I'm probably pumped up with pain meds too.
Totally. Yeah, I would hope.
What an experience.
Greg's bones had to be reset, and the following few weeks, doctors weren't sure if Greg's leg would make it. He had to have 6 surgeries and dealt with complications from the infection, but after everything, doctors managed to save his leg and Greg would walk again. He got messages and visits from forgotten acquaintances and complete strangers, and he began to question his old ideas of independence and entertained new ones about the opposite. Meaning, I don't think he's going to take any more solo hikes.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Have a buddy out there. Someone to talk to. I feel like the more I learn about Greg, the more he sounds like you. Because like when the rescuers came, it was like, oh, he was so excited to talk to someone. For the first time in 4 days. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would be going crazy. I mean, you know the feeling like if you've ever felt like during a summer break, you kind of don't hang out with friends for a few days and you just start going a little stir crazy.
Sure.
Yeah. Like imagine that for
times
a week.
Times a million.
For a week and you talk to no one.
And you're in a survival situation.
Yeah. And you're about to die.
Yeah. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
That is funny. I definitely have experienced being stir crazy and like wanting to see people, but also it takes me much longer than you because I am pretty introverted, I think.
Yeah.
Like I definitely like my alone time. So, but not in a survival situation. I think I would prefer to have someone there.
Yeah.
Greg said, "So many people searched for me. There's been such an overwhelming outpouring of support. I never felt connected before. This is what it took for me to finally feel at home." He applied to grad school and he was studying environmental law. And he also said, anybody can survive as long as you want to. But that's his survival situation out on Mount Goddard after a compound fracture.
Oh, good for him. He went back to school and...
Yeah, environmental law. Pretty cool.
Yeah, love that. That cannot be easy.
No. He speaks for the trees. Oh my God, he's the Lorax. Let's go. Let's go, Greg.
The lawyer Lorax. Maybe that's what his firm should be called.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think his takeaway was like really simple, but kind of seems similar to what other people who've gone through
survival situations.
But like, I don't know, specifically like wilderness, it's like you can survive if you want to, mm-hmm. as long as you want to.
Yeah. We've talked about this a couple times. It's like, as long as you're having like a positive outlook on it, like you have a lot better chances, I feel, than if you just completely felt like you were going to die out there.
Yeah. And I feel like we touched on this like a few episodes ago, because it just seems like it seems like nothing, right? Like, what physically happens when you just have positive vibes? Like,
right.
Does it really make any difference? But it really seems to be the reason that most people make it through.
I wonder if it has something to do with, like, you know how people say that like stress is so terrible for your body,
mm-hmm.
and like can cause so much, I don't know, sickness and just like badness. I wonder if that has something to do with it, like really heightened stress and like just
cortisol.
Yeah, like wholeheartedly believing that you're toast out there, I feel like has to be bad for your body.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting that it like starts with the belief.
Yeah, it is. It's super interesting. I don't know. But his positive outlook, he feels, impacted his survival. And so many others feel that way as well. So that's pretty cool. I don't know what it is, but I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, we wish him well. I hope he found a great career and took down some big cases.
Yeah, and is just generally having a good time.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is our story. Why don't we finish off with a palate cleanser and you can tell me your good thing.
Oh, my good thing is that after shoulder surgery, I think today or tomorrow will be 6 months since
really?
I got my surgery. I am back to swinging a golf club in the full range of motion.
Hell yeah.
And almost at full speed. I'm kind of still working back into it, but I'm really excited because it's been a bit of a long road.
Yeah, right in time for summer, which is exactly what you wanted.
I know. It really kind of worked out for me this year, or like last year leading into this year, because, you know, I had really shitty time, like lost my job, had to find another one. And, you know, it just worked out. I found a new gig and then they let me like start later, could get my surgery. Mm-hmm. And now I recovered and can go right into the golf season.
Yeah, it was good timing too. Because I mean, that surgery had been kind of looming for a while.
Yeah, it was like I had to do it at some point, right. But it wasn't an emergency.
Right.
Which is like the worst, like counterintuitive, like human thing.
Yeah, because who wants to choose to go under the knife?
Like, right.
Nobody.
Yeah. It did help that I had gone through a surgery before.
Yeah, pretty big one too.
So I had I had my hip pretty much had the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt a little more comfortable. But I mean, yeah, to go under is just like scary.
Totally is. But you got it done, and now you're going back into golf season.
Yeah. So I guess more than one good thing in that, but...
That's huge. That's really good things.
Definitely my good thing. What's yours?
My good thing is so much smaller and insignificant compared to that.
It can't be that big every week.
No, totally.
You know?
I cut a watermelon yesterday. And it was really sweet. Yeah. And I just, all summer long, it's my favorite thing to have just like a big old bowl of watermelon in my fridge. And I mm-hmm. eat it all week long. And then I get a new watermelon. And then I, you know, repeat. And this watermelon is a very strong start to my watermelon bowl season.
It's really good.
It was a really good watermelon.
I love melons.
Me too.
I know. I didn't like them until last year, pretty much. But when it's good.
It's good.
It's good.
And I've been saying that. I keep saying that. Whenever anyone's like, I don't like cantaloupe or honeydew, my response is grow up.
Yeah, well, grow up. That and then like don't buy the pre-cut crap at Kroger.
Get a melon, you know? Cut it open. Hopefully it's ripe and then eat your melon.
Well, you got to tap it. You see, everyone has their own like little superstition about how the melon is ripe.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Got to find one.
Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this story. We enjoyed talking about it. If you would like to check out that bonus episode about the Hartford Circus Fire, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram @nottoday_podcast. I also posted a TikTok recently about the story of Stacey Castor, who poisoned her husband and attempted to murder her daughter to frame her for those two murders. Over on TikTok, you can find that at @nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone who knows a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We also have a Twitter that is not today podcast, but the T on the end of podcast is A3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.